raindrops keep falling on my head. And just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops.
Hello, I'm Todd Williams. Welcome to episode 5 of my interview with my father, Ray Hinsey. If you haven't listened to episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4, and the episode 1 addendum about Alberta, I encourage you to do so. I managed to get this podcast listed in the iTunes store under the Society and Culture category. If you search for Todd Williams or Ray Hinsey, you should be able to find it there and subscribe to the feed. In this episode, we'll pick right up where we left off in our last episode. Ray and Donna move out of the tri-level home in North Salt Lake and into a duplex in Bountiful and eventually to the home in Farmington, the home where Dad would live for the next 2 decades. Donna gave Dad an ultimatum to move or should leave, a threat she had made before. Dad called her bluff and she filed for a divorce. And, to her chagrin, Dad didn't fight the divorce. And the marriage ended and eventually opened the way for him to marry Gloria Williams, with whom for the last decade he had been having a secret relationship. Dad will talk about his various jobs, including as a police officer, where he, by sheer luck, arrested the Salt Lake City drug kingpin, Eli Killer Jenkins, during a routine traffic stop. Dad kept the convict's revolver, a snub-nosed .38 that was loaded when they found it in his car, as evidence in the event the case ever went to trial, which it apparently never did. We'll talk about some of Dad's buddies and the things he liked to do, including hunting, where he was famously a good shot and would even shoot deer for others. We'll talk about Ray's relationship with his parents in their later years in life and the special bond he had with his older sister Jane, and much, much more. Thanks for joining.
Cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me. Nothing's worrying me.
Kim's born in 66, and then I've got you moved from the tri-level house into a duplex.
And that was in Bountiful.
67.
Yeah, and I can't remember the reason we had to move then, but we had to move.
I mean, was that, of all of these moves, it would seem to me that that would have been the hardest one because you had this new house that you had invested time and energy.
You don't understand Donna.
No, for you.
I'd say, Donna, we can't move. We just got this, and she'd say, okay, I agree, we shouldn't move. Then you'd come home and she's quiet, bawling. What's the matter? Oh, nothing. I don't know. So pretty. After okay,
just
whatever
kind of
it is.
Kind of sulking.
Sulk. She could sulk for weeks.
And eventually you just
hell, yeah, whatever it is, we'll do. No, okay. And then she'd always have a new area all picked out and had been to, sculpted out, and so and so says it's wonderful. So, yeah.
And, I mean, are you still kind of at this stage? I mean, you're now 36.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about, well, you want to, you know, the cardinal sin in your home was to
upset mother.
Keep mom happy, not upset mom.
Yeah.
I mean, is this still kind of your mindset at this point in your life?
Always is, because that was drilled into me. I've always been taught.
Your marriage didn't last very much longer after this, because I think, when did it end? 67, 68?
When we moved to Farmington.
It ended.
And, well, it ended because I got an ultimatum. When she'd given me this before, move or I'll divorce you.
So you had had that more than once?
I'd had that for years.
Okay.
And
that was always the threat?
That was always the threat. Move or I'll leave you.
I can't live here anymore.
I'll move without you. And so in Farmington, I called her bluff.
Okay.
And then she got very upset and really didn't want me to move.
Yeah.
Yeah, but That was it.
So are you wishing you would have called her bluff sooner?
Sooner, yes, I had. I think it would have avoided a lot of stuff. But
so,
yeah, if I had stood up...
Did you guys fight a lot? Were you fighting a lot at this time?
Donna wouldn't openly fight.
She just
stew and sulk.
Until she got her way?
Until she got her way, yeah.
So no. you didn't get mad at her?
Oh, yeah, I'd get mad.
And she wouldn't...
Okay.
Explode
okay.
on you?
No, she would agree. You're right. But then...
So, academically, she could understand, then, but yeah. emotionally, she had a hard time.
She couldn't handle it, yeah.
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 So, and, you know, Jim is 7, mm-hmm. I guess, at this time. Bonnie's mm-hmm. 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. Kathy's 10.
10.
11.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
And when they
home life generally happy. I mean, you guys eat dinner together as a family.
Yeah.
Donna would cook meals. Yeah. And sit around the table.
She was,
and
technically, you ate, you brushed your teeth. All of this she did just by clockwork. Yeah, she was good at that. Yeah, but when they get older and got a mind of their own and conflicted with her, she had to control.
She couldn't control.
No, she.
So what would she do when she lost control?
Then she was threatened.
Would she turn inward?
No, she would push you right away.
She'd push you away.
Yeah, push him away. See, Kathy went to live with foster parents.
Yeah.
How
old was she when that happened?
Yeah, she was in high school.
Okay, so that's that's later, after you guys...
Jim came to our house and,
lived for a while.
She couldn't handle... Quick, they started to have minds of their own. She couldn't control.
Yeah. Well, she was single for quite a while, though, wasn't she?
Well, off and on, yeah.
Working. I mean, it's hard to be a single parent with 3 kids, too.
I gave her the equity in the house. I gave her everything.
So financially, she should have been
She should have been. Yeah.
And you paid child support, too,
child support, you bet, every month.
Every month.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what did, you know, what was the weekly routine? I mean, you'd get up and go to school, work. Yeah. Were you doing night school at the time?
Yes, and shortly, it wasn't too long after, I can't remember, 2-3 years I started night school. I remember, when did you go on your mission?
82.
I started night school, maybe it was when Jeff went, because I thought, oh boy, here's some extra money to...
So you didn't start night school until Jeff went on his mission.
Yeah.
So he was born in 57, so he would have been 76-ish when he went on his mission.
So that's about when I started.
Okay. So that's still about 9 or 10 years after after this.
But I worked on the mosquito. I worked at the radiobiology lab, and then I got on the mosquito crew. I always worked 2 jobs at least.
And you worked as a police officer for a while.
That was when we first got married in North Salt Lake. Yeah.
Okay. So that was years before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we skipped that, but I mean, kind of, what was that like working in the police department? How did you get started?
Well, you didn't get any training. Here's a badge and a gun. Go out and arrest people.
By yourself or
with
a police officer?
No, you were alone.
They give you a car?
Car, yeah.
No training at all?
No training at all.
How did you know what to arrest people for? You just knew? Well,
I had a radar. This is the speed limit. There's a red light. And it was before the freeway. And
so it was mostly traffic violations?
Traffic violations, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the story that we need to capture is when you arrested that drug dealer?
Yeah.
So who was he? What was that all about? How did that happen?
He had a big fancy Buick. He was going sideways almost down the street. And I pulled him over, and he was a very polite colored man.
Which Salt Lake doesn't have a lot of colored men. It's mostly white, right?
Yeah, North Salt Lake. And he was higher than a kite.
And you find out later he was on cocaine?
Heroin. Yeah. Okay. Well, the whole story was, when I pulled up, I had the lights in his back window, I could see him stashing. So when I get up and look at him, and he smelled alcohol, which I found out later what they did to cover their inebriation. I mean, their
behavior?
Behavior.
They appeared drunk?
Gargled alcohol, so you'd get to smell alcohol and think they were just drunk, yeah. So I pull him over, and he's very polite. And what for are you bothering this good old colored man? Really, you were very, very polite and get out. And I call a wrecker and impound his car, and I get him in the police car, no problem at all. And get him to the jail. and he blows in the breathalyzer, and the needle doesn't even raise.
So you know he's not drunk.
I know he's not drunk. But one of the sheriffs in there says, I know him. He told me, he says, I know who. And so they published, I don't know if they still do, a crime book, who's active. And so here he was, Salt Lake, Eli Killer Jenkins, that was his nickname, rap sheet longer than your leg.
For drugs and...
drugs and whatever, and murder, and...
He was actually
he got the name Killer because he beat the rap.
Yeah.
But luckily for me, I found out when they're high on hair and they're lovers, they're not violent at all. And so he said, that was all new in Davis County at that time.
Drugs, yeah, I can imagine.
Doug's maybe a little in Ogden, yeah. Salt Lake. But he said, let me see if this guy's on duty. Narcotics man who had been undercover in Salt Lake and it got a little hot, so they stashed him in Bountiful for a little while. And he happened to be on duty that night. So we called him, and he rolled right up to the Davis County Jail. And as quick as this nice, polite colored man saw him, he became dumb nigger. You M&F-er and what, you remember? And so he took us through the procedure, and it was quite interesting. Turned his arms over, rolled his sleeves up.
Needle marks.
All the way, just rotten veins all up and down. He was the kingpin of the drugs in Salt Lake. He said, empty your pockets. And I never seen so much cash in my life. He had a little over $3,000 in small bills, which makes quite a pile on a table.
So how come you didn't do that when you...
Because I do. We don't know what drugs. I'm looking for a bottle of whiskey and a drunk.
Oh, okay.
So then he said, who impounded his car? And I told him, and says, call him. Bountiful Motors, where is it? Well, it's inside. Keep it locked up. Okay. So keep the chain of evidence, he said. He said, I'd like to search it, but we can't search it now. Incident to arrest, you could search it. Now we got to get a search warrant.
Oh, okay.
So then it's an improper. So the next morning, he and I went before the judge and got a search warrant and went back and found down between the seats these capsules of heroin.
That he was using at the moment.
He says this guy never gets away from his own source, his own fix.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I saw him switching. We got under the floorboard and there was that loaded .38 snub-nosed revolver, which I still have. I'm still holding it for evidence because...
In case it ever... I'm sure he's probably long gone by now.
Yeah, he's long gone by now. And so then they got a hold of the Salt Lake police and said they were building quite a case against him, and they've never been able to catch him quite with the goods, and so they're going to serve a no-knock warrant, kick in his door and get him, and he says, we'll call you so you can be there. And they never did, the Bounders. But they arrested him, and the Fed sent him to prison. My case never come to trial, so I'm still holding his gun as evidence. So.
Were you ever worried about that afterwards?
No.
That somebody might come and try to get you?
No.
Retribution or revenge?
I didn't ever think even. We did run a check on the gun, and there was no wants on it. It wasn't a known criminal gun, so.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was. But it made me realize I'm getting, I think, $2 an hour.
Not worth it.
They're carrying guns. No, I'm not.
Well, yeah. I mean, you hear about police officers just getting shot at routine traffic stops because they pull over the wrong guy.
Yeah. Well, that didn't happen back in the 60s, early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
But he was on heroin, so you think that...
Yeah, they said, told me later that they're lovers.
I mean, what do you think might have happened if he hadn't been
well,
high?
Well, the other one was speed, and then they'd blow your head off because that do whatever pops into your mind, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Very interesting.
In fact, they can't keep awake. I noticed that guy, they call it on the nod.
So it was basically, he looked like it was drunk driving.
Yeah, just
his car was weaving all over the place.
All over the road, and you could smell alcohol. So what do you think?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what were weekends like back in the late 60s when you're still married to Donna and living in the Bountiful house or the Bountiful duplex? Yeah, did you guys go on trips? Was it work around the yard?
We had not much yard. I worked at the radiology lab. I worked
on weekends?
Sure.
Because it was always you needed cash?
I needed cash, yeah.
Was that to make the house payment or just have extras?
Just have money.
It wasn't a survival thing. It was extra.
No, it was survival.
It was survival.
Yeah.
You needed everything.
You needed everything, yeah. Because
your teaching salary wasn't enough?
Well, after I got started, yeah, but it takes a while to
kind of get going.
Get going. You know that. You want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did put a yard in North Salt Lake. I remember now. Yeah, I did.
All right. What about summers?
Worked at radiology lab.
And the mosquito abatement?
No, that when I got the mosquito abatement, I quit the radiology lab.
Okay. So, I mean, when I worked at the radiology lab, and the summer was pretty much full-time. I mean, you were there 40 hours a week,
well,
painting.
You recovered, and you were covering vacations, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was full-time for you over the
summer when I did. And then when I got the mosquito job, then I quit all that. It was too far to drive.
Did you take family vacations? Do you remember any with Donna back in that time period?
I sure don't.
Taking a week to go to California?
I don't remember anything like that.
Camping in Yellowstone?
We went with the family a few times behind. Donna wasn't an outdoors person.
Not, huh?
Not at all.
And you couldn't afford hotels?
Hotels or whatever, no.
Who were your friends and your buddies that you hung out with then? Was it the radiobiology guys? Was it Williams and Sedge?
No, there was Dave Ecton. You don't remember Dave.
I know the name.
He was at Stadium Village. Then Harold Haslam, when he got North Salt Lake, did you
was know? It? No, I don't even recall that name.
Don't you?
What'd you do with them? Hunt?
Hunt, yeah. And Don Bishop.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Janice's husband?
Yeah.
Uncle Don?
Uncle Don, yeah. And the cop at North Salt Lake, the full-time cop, Lynn Priest. Yeah. I always had a lot of buddies.
Yeah. You're a friendly guy.
Yeah.
So, what would you guys do? Ride horses?
Rode horses a lot. Gene Hensey was still there, and he liked to bring them out, and we'd ride a lot.
Did he have horses,
Uncle
Gene?
Yeah, always. The boy.
Okay.
Uncle Gene was dead.
He wasn't dead until the 70s, because he was on a mission in 76.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we went to Nauvoo and saw him, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the early years, 10 years before that, did he have horses? Or you're talking about his son Gene.
His son Gene.
He had Australia.
Horses. He had horses, and he didn't have horses then because he'd moved from Nephi and was living.
So you were friends with little Gene, Uncle Gene's son Gene.
Son Gene,
who was still younger than you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's 10 years younger than me.
10 years, but he did like horses.
He still likes horses.
You like horses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Harold had a horse.
Did you haul the horses places, or did you just ride in the mountains behind the house?
We rode in the mountains, and I had a rack and a slide in my truck.
And you'd load the horses in the
back
of the truck?
Load the horses, and we'd go elk hunting.
Now, what truck? Because you didn't get the GMC until later.
The GMC I got in the 80s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that the truck you're talking
about? That's the truck I'm talking about, yeah.
What about in the 60s and 70s?
How did we get the horses up there? I don't remember. We didn't take horses. We used to just go have a deer cart we'd go hunting on.
Okay.
That was a big outing with the whole family.
I mean, I saw a picture. It might be in your history with you and Walt Angus and a couple other guys out riding horses someplace, and it must have been in the 60s or 70s.
It was Dave Ecton could get a plane.
Oh, you flew.
We flew to Duchesne, and he knew somebody out there that had a ranch, so we rode out there and went horseback riding and laughed at Walt because an English went on a horse. And
pretty funny, huh?
Pretty funny.
Was that his first horseback riding?
Yeah, that was his first. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
So you still hunt deer at that time?
Yeah, I'll say.
You shoot one every year?
Every year. You needed the meat. I was a good shot, and the family would go, and they'd have a family outing, and I'd shoot all the deer for them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're talking the Hensey family
outing? The Hensey family. We'd go up they called it Behind Porcupine. You go to Colville, go up into Wyoming, and then come back in the backside of Utah in the mountains up there.
And that was all on horseback or
no,
hiking?
No, that was hiking. Then we didn't have horses with the hensies, yeah.
All these years, I never knew you. I mean, I figured you were a good shot, but yeah. I didn't know you were, like, famously yeah. good as a good shot.
Don Bishop and I, because the other family, they were social, and we'd get to shoot all the deer for them, so.
Did you ever have, like, and, shooting competitions
no,
at targets
I never
or anything
did.
Like
Not.
That?
No, I did in
who
the Army.
Who could shoot the most
yeah.
deer?
I did in the Army, but after the war, see, this is after the war for 10 years.
Yeah.
You could shoot deer anywhere. So nobody hunted them during the war, and they multiplied. And
so the permits were plentiful. And
you could shoot 5 and 6 legal deer.
Per person?
Per person. If you applied for the
permits
and went to the different areas where they wanted to thin the herds out.
So, you had to go to the...
Yeah.
places. I guess if you were, how do they know where you shot the deer? Then just on
well,
the
because they, yeah, well, they, you know where you're going to the Colville area, your checkpoint, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, your parents are now in their 60s, I
yeah,
want to say.
Yeah.
Your dad was born in what, 84?
In 1984, yeah.
1884. So now we're in the late 60s, so he's probably more like 70 or 80.
Yeah.
He's 80.
Yeah.
Because he dies in early 70-something,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah,
71
yeah.
or 2?
2, something like that, yeah.
So he's in his 80s now. I mean, what was your relationship with them kind of in the, you know, in this later part of their life?
I was respectful. Went and visited them. Loved them. They loved me.
Did they come see you often?
Not often, but they came when they could.
They were still driving?
Yeah.
They had a car?
Dad, I guess in the latter years... He was losing his sight, so mother was his eyes.
Did she drive?
No, not. She did when she was younger, but never later.
Never later.
Never later, when the freeways and all that came, though. Yeah.
So how would they get places then? Would people,
somebody would bring them.
Go get them?
Yeah, or somebody would bring them. Yeah.
Okay. What about your brothers and sisters? I mean,
They were all gone.
Well, but, okay, talk about the Hensey family reunions or Christmas parties, because it used to be every year when I was younger. I remember going to the sacrament meeting the Sunday after the family reunion or something. And
but as far as them being at home, when I was at home, I was alone.
You were alone.
I was 10 when the war started, and they went.
So you were never really close to any of your brothers and sisters?
No. Jane.
And Bill. Right. Is that because she
kind of raised me, and we were always kind of...
She was keen. She was
queen.
Closer
we
to you. You guys bonded?
Yeah, we always had a special bond, Jane and I.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And Keith, Uncle Keith, remember him?
Yeah, I remember Uncle
Keith. Go to East Carbon and...
Shoot. And hunt.
Yeah.
My note says, the Farmington home, 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been about the time that Gloria divorced Gail.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were divorced in 68.
And
you divorced Donna.
And Donna said if we didn't move.
So you bought the house there in Farmington while you were still married to her.
Yes.
And you had learned from Court that it was his house.
Yeah. Wayne at Zions Bank was the financer.
Your
Court.
Brother Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne, yeah.
So he and Court knew each other from...
Very well, yeah. The Court, Wayne financed all Court's buildings, so...
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And Court, was it a home builder? Or
yeah, he's a home
builders?
Builder. He was a home builder.
Condominiums or apartment complexes?
Anything he could. He built quite a few.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty good risk because Uncle Wayne was
He'd do anything for me because I was Wayne's brother, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't take advantage of him.
No. But that was the connection.
That was the connection, yeah.
And so you learned about his house in Farmington
through Wayne, yes.
Did you get a good deal on the house because he was trying to unload it? Or?
Got a fair deal on the house. Got a fair deal through Wayne, yeah.
Okay, and at the time it was a 3-bedroom house.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think of it
before the addition.
Before the addition.
Yeah.
You had a kitchen
and
dining
think,
room upstairs, a couple of bedrooms, a bathroom.
Yeah, I think it was.
The main living room.
Yeah.
The master was down. And then a kind of game room.
Big family room downstairs.
That
was
it.
That
was
it, yeah.
Okay.
And it was $21,000.
$21,000.
Yeah. And on a half acre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right up against the mountain. So that was.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a steal.
Yeah.
But I know you sold it years later. You probably sold it for a couple hundred thousand or more.
No. Yeah, we did well on it.
Yeah.
Actually, if we'd have stayed, we could have got more, but that's when your mother's bad times.
Yeah. Well, and I heard it was a hard house to sell, too, wasn't it? Because it was so large. And
large, but the interior was beautiful. And actually, we didn't have too much trouble selling it.
Okay. But I thought you had it up for sale for a while, and then it didn't sell, and so you took it off and then put it back up again.
I can't remember all the details.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy about moving and building a new house. When I retired, we could have had things pretty set, but you know what your mother did with all our money.
So you would have stayed in the house in Farmington?
Yeah,
you liked it there?
Sure.
You're comfortable there?
Comfortable there. Had my garden and my horses, and
everything was established.
Everything was established.
You knew all of the all of the issues with the house and how to deal with them.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you had a new roof on it at the time.
It had a flat roof, and they're horrible, so you put a
pitched roof on it, and that solved all the leaking
problems.
Did you ever put central air in? Was it always a swamp cooler?
No, it was always a swamp cooler. Central air wasn't coming along yet in life.
Yeah. So, you can't live here without it.
No.
The swamp
and
cooler
comb screws, they wouldn't work either.
Okay, so you get the house in Farmington, and... when did you and Jim Williams get Dolly and Stardust?
Dolly was your mother's.
Okay, why did she buy a horse?
For Scotty wanted a horse.
Okay.
And so...
she needed a place to keep it.
Needed a place. She was boarding it at the Cottonwood Club.
Okay.
Okay. And so quick as we got out there, and then at that time for years, Court had land they had bought and they weren't developing, so I had free pasture anywhere we wanted.
And it was fenced in?
Fenced in, yeah. Okay. Well, I did a lot of fencing, too, on it, so.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we had quite a few. I had a gray horse, a gray mare, and then Dolly and Stardust. Jim Williams had Stardust, but he didn't like to take care of him, so I took him in.
So Dolly wasn't your first horse that you'd had as a... young married man, then you had others.
I'd had others, yeah.
Okay. So there was a story in your history about building the corral and all the rocks that you had to deal with.
Well, tried to dig a post hole and you'd hit a rock about the size of this table. So you'd go over here and put the next post over here. So the corral wasn't straight.
It was, okay.
You learn in Farmington, you dodge those big rocks.
Well, there was a big rock in the second plateau tier that was always there.
Yeah.
And I think when they finally got rid of it to build the foundation for the future houses, that was a pretty big rock, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can imagine that that's the
They
that's
all
the
came
problem.
Down in the 20s on the mudslide.
Okay.
That's where
Is that right?
Yeah. See, you go over to the church, a block or half a block, and there was no rocks.
But there was a mudslide in the
20s. In the 20s. They overgrazed the hillside with sheep, and the rocks came down the mudslide. Yeah.
Okay. So was what we call the big rock, that was the...
And now there's houses all the way around it.
It's still there, though.
Still there, though, yeah.
Did that rock come down in the mudslides?
Yeah, they all came down the mudslides.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I thought that was like a prehistoric kind of thing. It had been there for centuries, but not so.
And now houses all around it.
Yeah, I know the whole place is.
That was quite a hike when you were a little kid. Go up and have lunch at Big Rock.
I can't, if you're picking a place where it would be the most ideal place to grow up. I mean, that was a pretty
Farmington,
good place.
Yeah, you could ride your
horses. We
had
hikes.
You had bikes. Yeah.
Beautiful sunsets.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't lock the door at the house. It was a safe place.
Yeah.
Kids could take off for hours. You wouldn't worry about us.
Yeah.
Can't do that these days.
No days. No, those are long gone. So.
So, and I don't, my earliest memory is the corral was always there.
Yeah.
So you must have built that before you and Mom.
Well, right first I put it in.
Okay.
Because I had to have some place in the winter to feed the horses.
Okay. So that's what you had. So Dolly and Stardust weren't the first two horses to live in that corral?
Yeah, they were out
they
there.
Were.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know this either about you, but you actually raised chickens?
My friend worked at the jail, Dale, I can't even remember his name now. He had some banty roosters, the colored kind, so we had some scratching around out and back,
Okay. Did they, I mean, did you eat their eggs?
Nah, there never was nothing. They ate them wild. We didn't ever.
Oh, you never did?
I didn't ever.
You had them for just a little while?
A little while. Well, the raccoons get them.
Okay. Because I don't ever remember a chicken coop or ever seeing chickens.
I had a little shed up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you and Donna get divorced in 68.
Mm-hmm.
And
your mother and I waited a respectable time and got married.
Mm-hmm. So when you split with Donna, I mean, how did you decide how you're going to split your assets?
I gave her everything.
You gave her everything?
Bought out her share of the house equity. She took all of the furniture.
So you kept the house.
I kept because she didn't want it.
When you say her equity, you split a 50-50 and you paid her the $10,500.
Or whatever it was, that it was her share of the equity.
Cash. You gave her all the furniture.
All the furniture.
You kept a car for yourself?
No, she took the car.
You only had one car.
We had one car.
What was it? Do you remember the make?
Yeah, it was a Ford. It was a 50, I don't know what it was. It was a Ford. It was a nice car. Yeah.
Okay. Four-door kind of a sedan?
Yeah, four-door sedan, yeah.
Okay. She took the car. So, but you still had obviously your income and your job and that kind of thing. So you weren't penniless.
No.
Okay. Where did she move? Did she move to Bountiful? Or?
She moved to Bountiful.
She go live with her parents initially?
No, they were old and gone. She couldn't get along with her dad. She wasn't going there.
Now, is Utah like an alimony state? You had to pay alimony, or was it just child support?
It was alimony and child support until the spouse remarried.
Okay, and then you stopped alimony.
The alimony stopped, but the child support never did.
Okay. Do you remember how much you were paying?
No, I sure don't. I don't remember.
And you were a prompt payer?
You bet.
You never had any threat to, we'll come and throw you in jail if you don't pay?
No, I paid. I felt very much responsible for my kids.
So how, I mean.
And seeing it peed me off again, she wouldn't work. As long as she had equity in the house and that, she just.
She wouldn't work.
She wouldn't work. And then when that was gone, then she forced herself to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, was that hard? I mean, who initiated the divorce? Was that you? Was that her?
Her. She threatened. Yeah. And then when I called her bluff, then she didn't really want one.
Did she file for divorce?
Yeah.
Okay. So she threatened.
Yeah.
You called her bluff.
Bluff. She filed.
She filed.
And I didn't fight it. She thought I'd fight. Yeah.
She filed thinking that you would, want a divorce, I'll give in.
Yeah, I'll give in and she'll get her own way. She always had all his life for 17 years. Why should she think it's going to be any different now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your parents were pretty old, I mean, in their 70s, 80s. Yeah. So I guess they generally didn't like it, but whatever.
Whatever. It's your life. Yeah, it's your life. What are they going to do about it? You know, you'll find that out with your kid.
I mean, what about your friends that you had?
Those that knew me knew what I was living with. Family knew pretty much.
Family knew?
Yeah, they knew Donna.
All right, and then you said you waited a respectable amount of time.
Which I don't remember how long.
Before you and Gloria started to be seen together in public?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how long was it after the divorce before you guys were like seeing each other pretty consistently in private?
I don't remember. Yeah, after I got divorced.
Because she had divorced Gail, and so she was single. You had divorced Donna, so you were single. So there wasn't anything amiss about it. But I'm sure, were you worried that people would start putting two and two together between you two?
Didn't frankly care.
Didn't at all.
By then, no.
So were you pretty happy about the divorce? Did you feel like a burden had been lifted?
A burden had been lifted, but then the amount of guilt for your kids.
Yeah. So it's a different kind of guilt.
Yeah.
Of abandonment.
I tried to support them and be there for them.
Well, I have lots of memories of you on the phone talking to Jim.
I tried to every day. Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Wow. So I guess it's November of 69. Is that when November 11th? Is that your anniversary?
Yeah.
What's the date? The
11th? Something like that. Yeah.
You and Mom decide you're going to get married.
So we go to Elko and get married.
And so you drive to Elko, which is Nevada, obviously.
Uh-huh.
At the border, I guess on I-80, across the border.
Uh-huh.
You buy a marriage license.
At the courthouse, right there, and get married by the justice of the peace, yeah.
and spent the night. I think I saw something in there. You only had like $10 or $20.
We didn't have, because we paid Donna off.
So you were very short on funds.
Funds, yeah.
And you were able to afford the room.
The room and a dinner. And the gas.
And the gas and the license.
Yeah.
And you spent every penny you had. You got there, you got married, and you got back.
But your mother would work, and I worked through jobs, and you worked through it.
And then, okay, so she's living in the house in Cottonwood.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living in the house in Farmington.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the beauty salon
mm-hmm.
close to her house in Cottonwood. Mm-hmm. And you've got your job at Davis High mm-hmm. School.
So we moved to...
Was there a discussion about where...
No, best? She loved Farmington. She thought it was a good place to raise the kids.
Okay, so she... And she was kind of raised on the farm.
Yeah,
she little
was
country,
farm
and
girl.
Farmington's not too far away.
Far away, no, she was happy out there.
And she wasn't working 5 days a week at that time.
No, three or four or two or whatever.
Yeah.
She would work depending really on our money needs. If we had something coming up, she'd send out flyers, you remember those, and work extra. And
Yeah. So was she making half of what you made?
I have no idea.
How much you made?
I had
to file your taxes.
I was a kept man. my money all went direct deposit. And if I needed any spending money, she always had a pocket full from the shop.
And she'd divvy it out to you?
Yeah, no fight or
anything. An allowance?
No allowance.
Who paid the bills?
She did.
Did she?
Yeah.
She handled the money.
She handled the money and very good at it.
And you were happy to let her do that?
Yeah.
As long as you had spending money, you were happy?
Yeah, as long as, you had $20 to... And it was, money was never a fight between your mother and I at all.
Yeah.
And we had a rule, if you're going to spend a whole bunch, let the other one know. But, I mean, I could have taken a check and written it, but it was just cash, I need a few bucks,
So she sells the house in Cottonwood?
Cottonwood, yes.
And she moves in the house in Farmington?
Farmington, yes.
And now you've got Scott and Todd and Jeff and Kim.
Kim.
Living at the house in Farmington, Jim and Bon and Kathy living with Donna wherever. And so on the weekends it was a madhouse.
Madhouse, yeah. Yeah.
So when was the decision made to add on to the house in Farmington to build the addition?
I can't remember. Her and Court cooked that up. Court had a crush on your mother all the time.
apparently more than one person had a crush on Mom. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she was able to flirt and use her womanly
charm. Well, she didn't flirt. He just wanted to please her. Court, he could talk to her. He never.
So what was it about Mom that...
I don't know, just...
Because it sounds like you could talk to her, too.
She, your mother was non-judgmental. That was the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't feel like you needed to hide anything
or
pretenses?
No, there was no pretense with your mother. It was so refreshing to have her get pissed off at you and call you a bunkhole and then forget it. No 3 week.
You guys didn't have arguments that would come up from 10 years before?
No. We had a good relationship that way. We didn't have problems until she started to... Till her mother died and she went off the end. And then,
yeah, which was much, much later.
Much later, yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Did I ever tell you about your mother coming to me in Hawaii? Didn't I?
Tell this. Is it in the dream?
In a dream. Lauren and I are in Hawaii in a condo. And
so this would have been, give me the year roughly.
It'd be roughly first year we were married.
So 2004?
Yeah. Five.
Because you married her in late 04.
Yeah.
Lorna, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this had been 2005.
Five before we went on any missions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were there. And your mother came to me in a dream. And she was young and pretty and sparkly. And
You remember her being?
Just like I remember her being. It was a very great comfort because she suffered.
Yeah.
And we visited and talked and, and she said, by the way, today was my anniversary. Now, that was the thing with us, because I forgot it once. She never said a word at all till we went to bed. She says, happy anniversary, honey.
Handed me a gift. And you felt like about that tall?
Yeah, about. And so, boy, it never happened again, so it was kind of a joke. She says, by the way, today's my anniversary. And I said, oh, honey. And I gave her a kiss. And it was her. I tasted her. And she woke up. I woke up.
You woke up. Felt real.
Felt real. Counted the days. It was our anniversary.
It was your anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that the last time you've had that kind of a close connection?
Yeah.
Close connection.
But it was neat to see her not suffering anymore.
I mean, do you think that that was a blessing, kind of a tender mercy for you?
Mm-hmm. A tender mercy
so
for
that you
me.
Wouldn't worry about
her?
Or?
Yeah. I think it was that she was all right. And we conversed, and I think she said her dad had joined the church, but grandma was still pissed. Now, does that sound?
Yeah. Her dad wasn't a member of the church?
I don't know. He was active now on the other side.
On the other side.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Yeah. But her mother was still pissed. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was. It was very comforting.
Good. Know?
Yeah.
Good. Good.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride.
Well, that's the end of the interview material I have so far, and we've only made it to 1969. Like I said at the outset, I fully intend on completing the interview as opportunity allows. Thanks for joining Dad and me on this journey so far. I hope you learned some interesting and informative stuff along the way. I know I learned a lot about Dad, but also about other things, including the mechanics of editing audio files and putting a podcast series together. It's not as easy as you think. I'm my own worst critic, but I will try to become a better interviewer in the future. The disappointing thing is that I didn't realize all of the mistakes I was making until I listened back after the interview was over, when it was too late for a do-over. That's a good metaphor for life. You just do the best you can and hope it's good enough. All the while, you keep learning and trying to improve. Thanks for listening, and take care. I've come so far, I can't go back. I'm in a whole new world, with new horizons to pursue. I'll chase them anywhere, this time to share this whole new world with you, a whole new world, that's where we'll be, a thrilling chase, a wondrous place for you and me. Ah, princess, whole new world.